Dave's Psych Lectures, part of the Thunderbird 6 podcasting network.
Sorry about the delay there. Someone has left the AV system in an unknown state, which was really annoying. But now it's fixed. Welcome back to the break. Hope you had a good break. I was going to write a paper, but instead I played Mass Effect 2. That's what I did.
What another keeps on happening while your adult years. Yeah. Is good cause.
It was a good cause. I agree. I mean, and so far I'm about probably halfway through the game, so I'm pretty excited. Maybe more than like 2/3. Today and I guess also on Wednesday, we're going to talk about stress and health. This is sort of a newer area of psychology, the idea of studying this as a separate kind of subdiscipline. Our behavior, speaking of things that give me stress, your best bet is to make things out of clear plastic so the blind guy will run into them. Anyway, our behavior has serious health effects, and, you know, there are some obvious ones, things like smoking and other drugs, and then, of course, includes alcohol. Your diet, because, of course, and your reaction to stress. Think about smoking makes your heart work harder because of the carbon monoxide, and the nicotine also makes your heart work harder. It also constricts your blood vessels, so your heart has to pump faster, work harder when it wasn't really supposed to. Various drugs have different effects. You think of alcohol having some pretty serious health effects. When taken in excess, actually a couple of drinks a day is good for you. It's good for your heart. You can't save those couple of drinks a day up until Saturday and have 14. Thinking, well, that's all week right there, two a day. No, that's not good for you. You get fat deposits around your liver. You end up making your own human foie gras. You don't want that happening. The other thing is that, of course, depending on the drug, you might, and they can have heart issues, things like cocaine. There are questions about a lot of other drugs. It's a little harder to understand drugs that aren't, as far as the health effects, that aren't legal, because people are much less likely to sign up to be in a study, because they first of all have to admit they did something illegal. But, you know, people do. That said, one of the most dangerous drugs out there probably is alcohol. I'm not telling you how to live your life, and I will not be preachy in these two lectures. It's not my business what you do to your own body, as long as you aren't driving a car. Your diet, of course, has serious health effects. We all know this. Think about, what's something that's really that we really need? We need sugar and we need fat. They're really good things. Our bodies run on energy. Sugar is energy and fat is stored energy, right? Well, sugar is one step away from being energy, from becoming ATP, right? So we're evolved to really like this kind of stuff. But, well, and this is the problem, because what ends up happening is that we don't have the same, we used to be able to very rarely run into something excellent and awesome like bone marrow. Bone marrow. Nice and fatty, flavorful, awesome. Tastes good for a reason. A lot of energy there. Problem is, now you can buy butter. Now you can buy a big jug of oil. Sugar, same sort of thing. We didn't used to have a whole lot of sugar available. Made a lot of sense. Biggest thing we have is honey, closest thing we had to just raw sugar. Now, you could go out and buy a pound of sugar. This is why things like ice cream are so good, right? It's sugar and fat rolled into one. This is one of the few things I'm not allowed to have in the house, and I do that of my own, volition, because ice cream for me is like heroin. I start eating it, and it's all gone. Even bad ice cream. What I do with that usually, though, is I mix it in a blender with some rum, make a blender drink. But still, it's one of these things. So that your diet, now we eat this stuff because it makes sense for us to eat it evolutionarily, but we didn't used to be able to get it in these industrial mass quantities. And, of course, it can have effects on your weight. You can have things like diabetes. You can go on and on about the negative health effects. Again, I don't want to be preachy about that. Another key one here we don't tend to think about, those ones are obvious to most people. If you said, what are the behaviors that affect your health? People are going to list things like smoking and drug, various other drugs. They're going to talk about your diet. People aren't going to talk so much about your reaction to stress. Your reaction to stress is important because, and you'll see this as we talk about this, because it's mostly what we're going to talk about. What happens here is you end up activating a system that's getting you ready to fight or run away, the fight or flight response. The problem is you don't always, you usually actually aren't in a situation anymore where the fight or flight response makes sense to have been activated. So now you have all this extra energy that you've burned for no reason. And in fact, there's even when one of the stress hormones is cortisol. And in fact, one of the things that cortisol does is destroys parts of your brain. So when you're actually not, you shouldn't be stressed, but you get that way. When something isn't life-threatening, it actually can have serious health concerns. The nice thing is here, we can deal with this not only sort of behaviorally and say, tell people to calm down. You can also deal with it better if you're in better physical shape. Right? Because you think about, I was watching yesterday on the TV with the Olympics there, the 15-kilometer biathlon. It's a crazy sport, right? You ski and you shoot. Pretty awesome. And they have to go from having 200 beats a minute to lie down and use a sniper rifle. I mean, that's calm yourself right down. Think about the shape they have to be in to take themselves from being, and you've been in situations where you've been running or doing something physical or whatever, and then you have to go down to be so calm to be able to steadily hold a rifle. That takes incredible shape. They're probably some of the best cardio-trained athletes in the world, biathletes, because of this. They have to be able to completely calm down in a very short period of time. Right? If I was a biathlete, I'd just call in an airstrike. You know, it's the quickest way, I would think. That was a joke. Apparently, wasn't that funny? We must talk about the last thing, but all of these behaviors and their effects fall under something we call behavioral medicine, which is behavioral medicine, health psychology, that kind of thing. Again, a pretty new thing. There was nothing, when I took intro psych back in 84, 85, there was literally nothing in the textbook talking about health psychology, behavioral medicine. It was, for the most part, it mentioned some of the stress thing, but on a very sort of tangential way. Behavioral medicine itself tends to be interdisciplinary, so that means you got all kinds of different people working together. You would have perhaps an occupational therapist, a medical doctor, a psychologist, of course. You might have a nutritionist, right? Working together with people. For example, let's say you have a heart problem. Well, and this is something, I mean, my dad had a heart problem, and after his heart attack, his cardiologist was working with him, so it was his family doctor. A nutritionist was telling him about, you know, nutrition and eating and all this stuff, and Dad wasn't very impressed with the woman because he said, she's a 300-pound nutritionist. I can't trust her. And I thought that was a good point. And she kept bringing out little models of things, saying, well, like, you could eat, for example, a portion this size. Did you have these little plastic pork chops? My dad looked at her and said, I'm not an idiot. We'll talk a lot about my dad because, in fact, he had a heart attack. His reaction to stress was never that good. And, of course, a psychologist working on that kind of thing, learning how to calm down. Right? Remember the other day when I got mad at all you guys about the test? That was like my dad for the whole 64 years of his life. Yeah, Jeff?
When you've got multiple people from different fields working on this, yeah, this is a problem. How do you reach consensus?
It's a good question. I mean, especially when this started out about 20 years ago, when people started doing behavioral medicine, because you have an occupational therapist who literally, you know what OTs do? They teach you how to do things that are therapeutic, but they're being done through doing various tasks. Almost, it's not, this is going to sound, if my friend Chris Farrell was hearing this, she'd kill me, but it's like they're teaching you how to have a hobby. That's not all they do. But, I mean, part of what they're doing is, Chris used to always say, you know, now she has to go to cookie baking class. Because part of it was like teaching people how to do things to, say, relax. Right? A medical doctor is going to have a very thing, it's all your heart, we have to worry about you know, you got to stop smoking, all this stuff. The psychologist is, you know, let's worry about your stress and sort of more of a holistic thing. And you got a nutritionist who may be more, well, obviously more interested in what you're eating. And if you're worried about what you're eating to the point where, I mean, my dad used to, for example, eat, he used to sometimes go to a bakery and buy like danishes and then fry them in butter, which, by the way, is really good. Here's a pro tip for you. Fry pastries in butter when you take them home. He loved stuff like that. He was also a real foodie. Telling him to now you have to start eating lentils is not really, that actually added stress to his life.
What the fuck's a lentil?
Yeah, no, that was my father's reaction, yeah. So then the psychologist has to realize, well, maybe not go so far, for example. And in fact, I remember my dad's family doctor saying, you know, this idea of you only having 20% of your calories from fat is going to actually kill you. You should just eat a normal diet. Now, I know that's still cutting back for you, Rick, but there's no way you can go on a really low, low, low fat diet because it made him angry, right? So they have to realize, and that's part of the problem here, is this person here is saying, you know, it's all about your nutrition. So you have to only worry about what's going in your body. And then the psychologist, but in this case, my dad's family doctor said, oh, come on, you're going to kill him by making him eat healthy. So yeah, it really is. And especially early on, I think more recently you have psychologists, for example, that are specially trained in behavioral medicine, and also medical doctors that are. So it's a little bit easier than it used to be. The other problem, of course, is you get turf wars. As stupid as it is. No, really, it's seriously. I mean, what happens is you get a psychologist who believes they know best, an MD thinks they know best, the occupational therapist, the nutritionist, they all think they know best, and they got all their training. And they think, well, oh, this is about stress? And the psychologist is like, well, that's mine.
And then you get situations where it's like when my dad was having his leg removed.
Right.
We had six different doctors from different departments coming into our room where we're freaking out over my dad dying.
Yeah.
And saying, we're going to take the leg. The guy comes in an hour later, we're not going to take the leg.
Yeah.
We think we can save the leg.
Yeah.
An hour later, we're going to take the leg.
Yeah. And also, you get the thing where every time you walk, a new doctor walks in, they take a whole new family history. Instead of coming in with the other chart the other guy wrote. So tell me about your problem. Haven't you heard this before? Couldn't you have got that guy's notes? So there's also the stress that's on the family, right? When someone's sick. And I mean, that's a serious thing to worry about, too. And they have to worry about those things. And now a lot of times in these behavioral medicine units, you'll not only have somebody that's working with the patient, but people that are working with the family. Because when you're changing someone's lifestyle, that involves changing the whole family's lifestyle. You know, when dad tried to go on this really low-fat diet, this meant my mom had to eat that way, too. And my mom as well, big foodie, right? Really into food. And it was really hard for both of them, I think. And, of course, she's worrying, oh, I got to cook this crap food that I don't like very much. But I have to be nice and calm because we can't have Rick getting upset because he had a heart attack. Right? So you have to deal with everybody together. It's really complicated issues. Yep. And I mean, it really is a serious thing about, like I said, turf wars. They happen because everyone thinks they know best, but they have their own perspective. When we talk about social psychology, I'll talk about how teams should work and how they can work properly. Someone has to be the leader, for example, and someone has to be able to... A good leader listens to input but then makes decisions, you know, like Commander Adama on Battlestar Galactica. There's a good leader. So, yeah, it's interesting stuff, this, and, you know, it is becoming much more common. And I think it's a good thing. The danger is you don't want to get preachy. That's sort of my take. So psychology's part is played by what are called health psychologists, typically. Again, a brand, pretty new field. Health psychologists study things like how do our perceptions affect our reactions to stress. So what's happening in the world, then we internalize it, you know, perception is, and then you organize it. Now, how do those perceptions affect how we react to stress, and do we have a stress reaction? Why is something for one person something you don't care about and you just sort of slough off, and something for someone else makes them angry or makes them upset or sad or whatever? Right? They study things like emotions, personality, and disease. So, for example, people that are more angry are more likely to get heart attacks. People that have the, quote, type A personality are more likely to have heart attacks. Right?
Type A personality?
We'll get there. It's intense people. It's more specific than that, but it's intense people. They also tend to be quite successful people on average. But there's a downside to success. It can kill you. It can kill you. Here's an interesting question. When and why do some people seek treatment, and of course, why did others not? Some people will show up at a doctor for everything. I go to a doctor maybe once every 3 or 4 years. That's because I didn't have a doctor, though. I have one now. Oh.
Doctor since he was St. Mary.
Yeah. But I managed, it took 6 years, but I got one. Go in for a yearly checkup kind of thing. But I'm talking about actually going in and saying, there's something wrong with me, I'm sick. The last time was in 2005, and I had this, I'm not going to get into the details, but it was ugly. I had more pimples than I had when I was 14. Out of nowhere, one day woke up, oh, that can't be good. And my eyes were running full of pus. That's it, you didn't want to know. So I went into the doctor. I was like, and I thought, it took a day. And I thought, my wife said, "You should go to the doctor. Go to the walk-in clinic." I said, "Oh no, I don't want to go in. I'll be fine. My immune system will take care of this." Of course, the next day it didn't, and I thought, "Well, I probably should go to the doctor." The guy said, "I got in there, and of course, if you go to a hospital, if you have a PhD, you should call yourself doctor because you get better service. I'm convinced of this, and they love titles in hospitals." So when I registered, I said I was Dr. Broadbeck. My ID says Dr. Broadbeck. So. Guy gets the chart and he says, "Oh, Dr. Broadbeck, I haven't met you." I said, "Yeah, that's Prof. University." I said, "I'm a real doctor. I wrote a thesis." And he said, "You PhDs are all the same." I said, "UMDs didn't write a thesis." But it was all in good fun. He seemed like a good guy. Now, so I don't go that often, but when I did go that time, I see people in there and their noses are stuffy. Some people go to the doctor all the time. Why is that, right? Now, there are people that don't go because they got this idea in their head like, now, I know I've got this big lump on my arm, but if I don't go to the doctor, it's not cancer. There are people that kind of think that way. And then there's people that go the other way, right, that, you know, every single little thing is cancer or is something to be concerned about. I stopped doing that when I was in Corner Brook, and I remember I bent down to pick stuff up, and I hurt my knee, and I got a bad knee from playing football in high school. And I was like limping for a day, and I went to the doctor, and I said, "Well, what's wrong with me?" He said, "You're getting old." I said, "Oh, thanks." So, you know, regular aches and pains, I don't worry about anymore because it's like, well, you know, I'm 44 years old. But other people jump in all the time. Good questions, right? So a health psychologist can worry about these kind of things. Questions about that? All right. So let's talk a bit about stress and illness. Now, we have what's called the fight or flight response, and we'll get into how this works, and we talked a bit about this in the first term course, but basically what this is the system that for the longest time kept us alive, right? We all come from Africa originally, in the Afar Valley. That's probably where the first humans were, which is cool. And back then, a stressor was a saber-toothed tiger. That's something to run away from. That is a good idea to stop worrying about your immune system and to maybe have your heart beat fast and to run. Right? Or a stressor is hunting, and you're hunting something where, I don't know, you're hunting like a mammoth. You know? Well, if you're going to try to kill that thing, it could kill you pretty easily. You'd have to coordinate stuff. Don't worry about your immune system. Don't worry about digesting food. You want to be able to run fast and be strong. Right? So it made a lot of sense to have this thing, the fight or flight response. So 100,000 years ago, the stressors in our life, or maybe you're having a fight over a mate. This would be two guys. Well, you might fight to the death. It's probably a good idea to be ready to die, to kick some ass or run away. Or bravely run away, you know? You're still going to live. That's not an actual picture of Homo habilis. You know, 100,000 years ago, it made a lot of sense. Today, not so much. Because you're busy, you know, playing a video game. And you can get so stressed out playing a video game, and I mean, I know this from personal experience, that it feels that, you know, your heart's beating fast, your mouth is dry. You're playing a really good online game, a really immersive one. I remember playing Rainbow Six Vegas one night with a team doing a terrorist hunt. And we played together all the time. And you're wearing your headset, and it's all very realistic, and you're yelling things like, you know, clear! Because you're pretending. Because you're a grown-up who's pretending. But it's so real that, in fact, my heart was beating fast, my mouth was dry, I almost had that sort of tinny taste in my mouth from adrenaline. And it's like 11 o'clock at night, and I said, boys, I got to quit. I got to go for a run or something. And I went for a bike ride for about 20 minutes just to deal with the energy. See, because the thing is about this stress system, your heart's beating fast and all this stuff for no reason in that case. If you're going to run or you're going to fight, it's good that your heart's beating fast. It's good that your pupils are dilated. But if it's doing that for no apparent reason, and it's shutting down, for example, your immune system, because again, what happens there is your immune system stops working. Because your body, basically, we've evolved a pretty sensible system. Should we have... worry about digesting food and fighting off germs, or should we worry about the saber-toothed tiger? Probably the saber-toothed tiger is the more imminent threat. So let's put our energy there. Right? But it's not healthy then if you shut your immune system down and stop digesting food for a while because you're playing a video game. It's stupid. Or because you're standing in line and there's always some guy in front of you buying lottery tickets.
And then playing them, and then winning, and then spending money as he's winning.
Yes. Exactly. And the bus is coming. And you know, it's like, I just want a chocolate bar. And you're standing there, and you're waiting, and you're waiting, and you're waiting. The thing is, you see, you could just leave. Or you could realize this actually isn't a stress situation. Right? Or you get the bank machine, and there's always the old lady standing there. This happened to me for years. I was always the guy when someone turned to me and say, do you know what my PIN is? No! Why would I know? Why would I know? Or someone like writing a check. People write checks. I can't believe it. You're in a grocery store. You want to go home. You're standing. Well, I'll just, how much is it? I'll write a check. What is it, 1943? So you get all upset. And there's no reason to get upset there. First of all, the only way that you're going to solve that with the fight or flight response is either running away so you don't get your groceries, or perhaps killing the old lady. And you're not going to get your groceries that way either. Right? Oh, you'll get free meals for the next 20 years. See how I did that like you're going to jail? Wasn't bad. But that's not really a stress situation. But your body does that. It makes sense if you're going into battle. It makes sense if you're playing sports because you're using the energy. It doesn't make sense if you're doing especially something sedentary, like playing a video game, or something sedentary, like standing in line at a theater, you know, waiting and you're getting angry because Avatar's sold out or something. It doesn't matter anyway. You want to watch Avatar? Just put, like, blue glasses on and watch Dances with Wolves. It's the same movie. So I've learned actually over the years to do, because I used to be horrible like this. And I've learned over the years to just like when I start not having fun playing a game, I walk away. It's like, oh, this isn't fun anymore. I'm not enjoying myself. It's supposed to be fun. I quit. Right? That took a long time, though, in therapy. Now, there are good things about stress. Sometimes it'll save your life or help you. And the reason why you might say, well, Dave, then if this thing actually is going to kill us, why do we still have it? Why hasn't it, you know, been selected against evolutionarily? Well, there are times, however, when the advantage of it is great. When you're in a fight, like an actual fight. Right? When you're in a car and you have like an accident. Anything like this, any actual situation that really is life-threatening, it's great to have a system that sort of hyper-energizes you It's a good thing. It'll save your life. So if you're fighting, right? I haven't been in a fight since I was 19, but it was probably useful there. An accident, a test even, to a point. Now, it's not good for your body, but we've talked about the other day about how a mid-level of stress is actually good. A mid-level of anxiety helps you perform well on tasks that you're not an expert at. So it actually is useful on a test. To a point, you can't get too stressed out, right? Though it's not going to save your life writing a test properly. Unless your parents kill you for failing, yes. Yes, I don't know what culture that would be, but it would be a very strange one. All right. So, yeah, it'll, you know, and those of you that have ever been in a situation where even an athletic competition, because you, while it's ritualized combat in essence, you're still using the energy, right? I used to wrestle in school, and it's amazing how no matter how much you trained at it, your mouth would go dry just as the whistle blew. But of course, part of that is, and there's also more sugar being pumped to my muscles, so you can be stronger, right? So you're still using the energy, right? For example, though, last night, if you're watching the game last night, by the way, remember, this was basically a regular season game. The playoffs don't start till Tuesday, right? Don't get stressed out by this. It's just a single game. So, you got all stressed out watching that? That was silly. It's not useful. Because you're probably just sitting. Were you actually in the game? Were you playing? No. So you get all worked up. Your heart's beating fast. Your pupils are dilated. Blood's going away from your digestive system into your muscles for reasons that have, at that point, no real good reason. You're getting all worried. You're starting to get, oh, I hate the Americans. You're starting to do that kind of weird thing. I Twittered last night, it's hard now to hate the Americans now that they have a president that can speak in complete English sentences. You have to realize, and you know what you do? Oh, we lost. Or, oh, we're losing. Well, I'm not going to worry. During the Grey Cup, I watched the last 5 minutes because I knew it wouldn't be good for me. It's not good for my heart to watch playoff games when my team's involved. I'll check the score now and then. Then you put it in perspective. Like I said, oh yeah, it's like a regular season game. Next we play Germany. That should be a little easier. I hope. They did play well last night. Miller stood in his head. He was amazing. Okay, what is stress? It's the process by which we appraise and cope with environmental threats and challenges. I clearly did not write that myself. Forget where I lifted that from, but it was not from my brain. That's not a bad definition, really. It's good as any.
Wherever you lifted it from, misspelled a praise.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, a pre-as, yeah. Yeah. You're right, I did. Smartass. So I think it's as good a definition as any. So you got the assess, the appraise thing in there where you look at a situation and you find it threatening, and if you do, then you get... And the coping part is the physical reaction. The coping part's the physical reaction, right? The idea of stress, however, I think is an overused one. I've often heard it said that when you go to a physician and they don't know what something is the cause, they just say, it's stress. You know? People do that a bit too much. Oh, why do you... What? Oh, well, I'm very stressed. So, if you want to use it that way, that's fine. But blaming everything on, quote, stress is a bit much. So I think it's a bit of an overused thing in popular parlance, and I think you should just be aware of that. So how does it work? Well, some of the first work here was done by a guy named Cannon. Remember the Cannon-Baird theory of emotion? Same guy. The idea, he's the guy that said we have a fight or flight response. That's his term. Basically, this is mediated by the release of epinephrine and norepinephrine, which are in your brain, they act as neurotransmitters. In your bloodstream, they act as hormones. Okay? So what happens here is this is released, and there are receptors in various organs in your body that react with epinephrine and norepinephrine and change the way the organs are acting. Excuse me. So your heart rate increases. And again, I was talking with the biathletes. You know, think about what they're going through with that amount of exercise. Skiing 15 kilometers, you know. Your breathing increases, so you get more your rate of breathing increases. That makes sense. You got to, if your heart's beating faster, it's got to be delivering oxygen, so it's going to increase your respiration rate, right? So that's basically what's happening there, and that's where the fight or flight response started. Like, that was the first person to talk about it. Yeah.
What exactly does your pupil dilating do for?
It allows more information to get into your nervous system, right? More visual information.
But why wouldn't we do that all the time? Is it bad for? Like, is that another thing that's bad for you?
Well, if you get too much light in there, it's going to be, yeah, you're going to hurt your retina. Yeah.
I was just curious.
No, it's a good question. So this guy named Sale, Hans Sale, who was at McGill, I think. He was doing this. Hormones, basically, people started really getting interested in hormones in the 40s, talking about them, discovering new hormones, etc. And people were basically, what's this hormone do? What's this hormone do? What's this hormone do? So Sale is taking a whole bunch of different hormones, and he's injecting them into rats. And then, of course, you kill the rat, you take a look at what happens to the rat's innards. Okay? He found enlargement of the adrenal cortex, which is part of your brain that helps control the release of epinephrine and norepinephrine into your bloodstream. He found the thymus gland was shrinking. He found stomach ulcers. And he thought, well, okay, this hormone apparently does this. Fair enough. Then he tested with another hormone, same thing. Other hormones, same thing. Then he uses saline and gets the same thing. Then he uses saline. So there's salt water, you know. Same thing happens. And then he starts to realize, I bet it's about a giant holding a little tiny being with a giant needle the size of the being injecting it. All right, think about that. Think about something that was, you know, couple of thousand times your size using a needle as big as you to inject you. I think that's a stressful situation. Everything's in my way. Get away for a week and I'm totally... So he's, you know, just saline. And then he even does it without injecting anything. He takes the rat, picks it up, and holds a needle. Same thing. This kind of work's also been done with taking a rat and just holding it out like that. Over, you know, that's pretty high. Same thing happens. Same thing happens if you could, this is, I've had birds have heart attacks in my hand when I worked with little chickadees. Just have a heart attack and die because it's stressful for them, as nice as you're trying to be. You know, when we catch them in the wild and, first of all, little animals like that, their hearts beat pretty damn fast anyway, 500-600 times a minute. It's crazy. It's a, and the thing just goes, it's done. Right? Again, pretty intense experience, though. So other liquids did the same thing. So he realized it wasn't about what he was injecting them with. It was the fact that he was injecting them with anything. So then he tried the fear thing, which was holding the rat out. The same thing for shock, just random shocks. See, if they can predict the shock, no big deal, because if they can predict it, they can get ready. But if it's random shocks, put them in a box and, you know, oh, every so often, we're just going to shock, you're just going to electrify the floor. Same thing happened. You look so sad that this kind of work's done. It's okay. It's okay. It's nice that you feel for the rats. It is kind of sad, but somebody had to figure this stuff out, right? So Sale said we have what's called the general adaptation system. Sometimes called the generalized adaptation system. The first thing is an alarm reaction. So again, remember, first you perceive the threat. That's not in this. This is all just the physiological, the sort of cardio kind of thing. This isn't about the actually perception. But first you perceive the threat. Then your body has what he calls an alarm reaction. Your heart rate increases and blood rushes to your skeletal muscles, the ones that make you run away or be able to fight. That's the first thing that happens. Now, you want to be able to stay at that place while you're in the stressful situation. Right? This is where things like cardiovascular health really help. Because eventually, if your heart can't take beating that much, it's going to slow you down. Right? This is why, for example, when you think about, you know, you might think, why would a weightlifter ever need to worry about cardiovascular health? Well, because competitions are pretty stressful. Aerobic exercise, right? For the longest time, athletes didn't do this kind of stuff. Right? All they did was, you know, strength training, practicing, things like that. And it was something that was really noticed in the 1972 Canada-Russia series when the Russian hockey team came in and they were in great shape. And the Canadian team, we were up 2-1. And after the first period, we lost that game 7-2. Game was played in September. Off season, nowadays, it's all about training all the time, cardiovascular, things like that. Back then, it was about smoking and drinking. Most of the guys on Team Canada were smoked cigarettes. And they were out of shape. Right? They couldn't keep up the effort. Eventually, though, we did win. In Moscow. On September 28th, 1972. 38 seconds left in the game. Certain things get burned into your memory. So you hit this peak, and these hormones keep getting released until you don't have any more. What I'm assuming here is the threat's still there. Right? Now again, remember, the threat might simply be you are standing in line. Because that's about the perception. But it might be that it's an athletic competition where you actually need cardiovascular health. It might be a real situation where you're fighting or you're in an accident or something. Okay? Finally, you go to 3, which is exhaustion. At this point, your defenses are depleted. You don't have any strength anymore. If you ever watched people do some of these really long distance races, right? You watch someone run a marathon in the Olympics. It doesn't even matter if they're winning. As soon as they've run that 26 miles, but 40 kilometers, they collapse. They look, you know, they don't look great, but they're running, and then they're like, phew. Or you'll see things like the 15,000 meter speed skating. You know, and that's like skating from here to freaking Echo Bay and back. More than once, I think, actually, when you do the math on that. When they're done, they just like, they collapse. I was watching the biathlon, as I said yesterday. At the end, it's so cruel. At the end, they have to go up a hill. It just seemed wrong. It didn't seem nice. And they were talking about this. Oh, look, he's exhausted. And this is the guy who's going to win. Look at the way he's holding his arms. And you could see the guy was like, he's skiing like this. But he won, which was cool. So at this point, you're very vulnerable. Now, if you were in a real bad situation, you're vulnerable to attack. But you're also vulnerable now because, for example, as I said, your immune system hasn't been working. But now you have no more energy left, so your immune system can't work anyway. So you're very vulnerable at this point. Lots of stress is bad, even if it's stress that's useful. Because one of the stress hormones that's released is epinephrine, norepinephrine. There's also cortisol, right? Now, the thing about cortisol is that the release of cortisol, for reasons that, evolutionary reasons that escape me, leads to destruction of hippocampal cells. Oddly enough, the cortisol levels are sort of monitored by hippocampus, but it's also important, as you guys all know, in memory. So, in fact, with too much stress, and now this would take a lot, you could actually get memory damage. Wow. That's crazy. And like I said, I don't know the evolutionary reason why. It might just be a sort of spandrel kind of thing. I have no idea. But, yeah, I mean, who knows? Who knows? I mean, we didn't used to live as long as we do now. Right? I'd be a very old man 150,000 years ago. I'd also be quite sunburned, I imagine. Yes, please. Yeah, but the thing is, that's only one event. I realize it would be stressful for a very long time, but it also wouldn't be adaptive. Think about, you got to think about this in long-term, evolutionary terms. It would never be adaptive to forget something really bad. Because if you forget something really bad, aren't you more likely to go back to where you were when something really bad happened?
Well, it depends on whether or not it's more of a threat to repeat it, or it would be better for you just to forget it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, well, first of all, we tend to remember sad things and upsetting things. We're hooked up that way. That's the first thing. But as I said, avoiding the situation is probably more important than not ever remembering the situation, because one of them is going to keep you alive, right? And think about something like that 100,000 years ago. It's probably best to just avoid that guy from the tribe, you know, from the clan you're in, whatever you want to call it. So you better remember, you know. Yeah. I think it's probably just a weird kind of side effect that, you know, like I said, we never used to live that long. So it could just be a side effect. It's probably has nothing, this probably has no real evolutionary advantage. It's an interesting point. But to get this kind of damage, you would need so much stress that... Well, you might have a heart attack first, yeah. Yeah. But it's an insidious thing. It's very strange. It's a good question. That was cool. I like questions that make me think on my feet. That's good. They're much easier than like the ones when I go, no. Those are easy questions, but they're much fun. What are stressful events? Well, here we go. Well, we're going to go from things that everyone finds stressful that only some find stressful. Everybody finds catastrophes stressful. I'm talking hurricanes. I'm talking earthquakes. And the thing is, even seeing them on TV can provoke a stress reaction. I think we all know this. When the Haiti earthquake happened, when Hurricane Katrina hit, I think most of us, if you saw the coverage on TV or heard about it, it upset you. It upset you. So no one enjoys these kind of things. Then there's significant life changes. Death, not your own death. That's not stressful at all. At that point, you're dead, so you don't care. But someone in your family, someone you know. Divorce is a stressful event, or breaking up. Job loss. But you know what's interesting? You know what's just as stressful? Birth, getting married, and starting a new job. It's amazing that, and those are happy things, right? Those are happy, happy things. I remember Dr. Keough, who's the new guy in our department, and he came on January 1st. He bought a house which they took possession of on December 18th. His wife is newly pregnant. They already have a kid, but now he's going to have another one coming. On January 21st, he had his PhD oral at Wilfrid Laurier University, and he started a new job. And I said to him, Dwayne, are you trying to kill yourself? With all this good stuff that's happening to you, you're going to kill yourself. Right? And of course, he knew this, and he laughed, and what was he going to do? But all those things are just as stressful. Moving into a great new place is as stressful as leaving a bad place. It's really, really weird. Right? Because they're big life changes. Starting school, right? You guys all went through this the beginning of last term or whatever. School change, university, wow, big difference, right? Stressful.
That's why people fight against change so much.
That's an interesting point. You know, there may be something to that. That may be adaptive to sort of be against change. You know, if things are working, don't change them, even if they might be good changes.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Though I tend to kind of agree with that. Kind of like that.
I don't agree with the mindset, but I can see
what Yeah. So you got to remember that the catastrophe one's easy. You know, no one enjoys going to war. They say they do until they get there. Until somebody's shooting at you. It's like, yes, I'm going to go fight a war. And then you get shot at, and it's like, oh, I'm pissing my pants now. Literally, you know. Yeah, exactly. That's not fun. It ceases to be fun when it ceases to be a video game, when it becomes reality. Everybody knows that. But then these things, they tend to be stressful. That being in a hurricane is equally stressful for everyone. Death in the family isn't equally stressful for everyone. Or birth. Divorce or starting a new relationship, not stressful equally for everyone. They all tend to be stressful because they're significant events, but they're not equally. Whereas, like, you know, catastrophes, no one's sitting there in New Orleans when the water was coming up going, nah, it'll be fine. No one was doing that. People were saying that before. I've been through hurricanes. You saw those guys, you know, those idiots you see on TV. I've been through hurricanes before. It's no big deal. I'm going to sit here and watch. It's going to be exciting. Oh, shit. You know? Right? Whereas the significant life change is a bit different. Those you can have some control over. And it's especially if you know this in advance. You can kind of arm yourself. So you know when you're starting school, when you're starting, let's say, you know, switching majors. 60% of Canadian university students switch their major. Just very common. But it's a stressful thing. Even if it's like, oh, turns out I hate history. I thought I loved it. I seem to like psychology. I'm going to switch over to that. Sounds like a nice positive thing. That'll be a stressful thing. If you know that in advance, you're much less likely to have this big reaction. Right? Then there's what they sort of, you know, daily hassle kind of things. These are things that used to really bother me. Loud neighbors, you know. Now, I don't worry about that anymore because I have my own house, but when I was in grad school, we had the bottom floor in the basement of a house, and the other people lived upstairs. It was a really nice place, except that they were kind of loud sometimes. And my wife was 7 months pregnant, and I was trying to finish my PhD, so there's some stressful events already. And these guys are having such a loud party. And I asked them a couple times quietly, could you guys please, you know, knock on the door, could you please kind of tone it down? Nothing. So Isabel, my wife, she's, because it was an old house, she got the idea to cut their power. This is why I love this woman. One of the many reasons I married her, she went and cut their power. And then they called and complained to the landlord, but when he heard the story, he said, Isabel can cut your power anytime she wants. I was like, yes! My little stories must piss people off. I don't care. Bad weather, snow days. Again, think about this. That sounds happy. We don't have to go to school. It's a snow day. Yeah, but you might have to do extra work, etc. Your coffee maker breaking. You ever had that when you get up in the morning and you turn it on and go, it doesn't make coffee anymore. The light's on. This goddamn piece of, you know, and you start to get angry. You should realize that, well, okay, I guess I could go out and get a coffee somewhere if I really need one. Team losing. Right? Big deal, we lost a hockey game last night. Just a playoff game, or a regular season game, rather. And you know what? Even if we do lose to Germany, which seems exceedingly unlikely, I will predict right now we win that game 5-2. So, who cares? You know? And I'm a big hockey fan. Yeah, whatever. So those kind of things you can really control, because you can take a step back and go, let's see. If we didn't win the hockey and all the skiing we're supposed to win and all the speed skating, maybe we could rent the podium. Does that change the fact that I live in a country, a Western liberal democracy, where I have freedom of speech and such? And oh, no, it doesn't. Things are actually pretty good here. I'm a little bit pissed off right now, but I'm going to let that go, and I'm going to go eat all the food that I have in my fridge that I can afford. Right? You want to see stress? Think about Darfur. You know? Think about things like that. That you can control. Oh, I don't... My coffee maker is broken. Well, I guess it was just a chance to make it, get a new coffee maker. It was amazing when my old computer broke. But it didn't break. I just had, it's a long, I'm going to fix it. But I was very angry with it in the morning, that morning. I slammed it shut. My wife said, "You're trying to break it now, aren't you?" I said, "Maybe." I said, "I am very, this is, what the hell, how the hell am I going to do my work?" And she said, "Why don't you buy a new one?" And I went, "Oh yeah, I guess I could." And everything changed and everything was fine.
And you spent money and you're happy.
Yeah, it's very strange. Though that was the university's, My research, travel and research budget, so it really wasn't my money.
I went to my
your money.
Controller across the room the other day.
Oh, yeah, I've done that one.
And I went to my psychiatrist, and I said, "Hey, I'm really worried about that. I'm not going to get that stressed about anything." I went my controller across the room, which is kind of like, I did the same thing last night with my TV remote.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's when you realize that, like I said before, when I stop having fun, I stop playing a game. I'm much better at that than I used to be. I used to punch holes in walls. I had a real bad anger stress problem. I put my head through a wall once. Yeah, I used to be very intense. I'm mostly good intense now.
How do you fix that?
You get a new wall. Yeah, a little bit of drywall, some spackle. No, the way that I dealt with it was I looked at it from a very rational way of looking at things. My psychologist said to me, he said, "Look, you're a very rational person. Is this good for you?" I said, "Well, no, I know it's not good for me." He said, "Well, if you know it's not good for you, and you think you could probably just like not get angry over things and realize that they're just little daily hassle kind of things, why don't you do that?" And in essence, that's how I dealt with it. Now, I'm not saying I still don't have little, I wouldn't call them relapses, because I haven't put a hole in a wall lately. But, what game was it? Oh, no, it was when Jennifer Heil came second instead of first. When she wins a silver medal, and this upset me. I punched the floor and slapped it. And I went, I realized, well, my wife said to me, "It's a little ridiculous, don't you think?" And I said, "Yeah, I guess it probably is a little ridiculous. You know, I'm being stupid, right?" So I'm not saying I'm not perfect. So these kind of things you can totally control. Right? You can really not let these things bother you. Now, if you're facing other, you're facing other bad stuff in your life, these things become worse as stressors. So if you're already having a bad time for some reason, if you're already facing some of those big life change kind of events, these things can really affect you. And I mean physically, because of course you're already, and psychologically, but you're already probably having your stress system, your GIS, activated a lot. Then you've got this activating it some more. More likely to lead to that exhaustion, right? So you really, these are the ones you can especially control. You can realize when you're standing in line and there's someone buying lottery tickets, the tax on the enumerate in front of you. You can say to yourself, I could probably do without that chocolate bar. I get it when I get to school. I'll go get the bus. Or you can think to yourself, well, this may upset me, but this guy's really stupid and wasting all his money, and I think that's funny. Go with that one. Or you could ask somebody for a pad of paper and say what the actually calculates for the person what the probability of winning is and just show him. That's kind of satisfying. I've done that before. When the person was there for 5 minutes. And they all want to touch the tickets, do they? Oh, I don't want that one. I'll take it myself. I want this one. God. So one of the big things that mediates stress is perceived control. So, again, this is this idea that I know I control this parts of the situation. I know I don't have to get angry. And if I do get angry when I'm standing in line and people are buying lottery tickets or they don't know how to use their bank card, right? Does me getting angry make them know how to use their bank card? So you think about it kind of logically. Do I have any control here? Yes, the control. I don't have control over them, but I have control over myself not to overreact. Or as my mother used to say, don't fly off the handle. Don't go off the deep end. She doesn't talk like that at all, by the way. She did say those expressions, but she doesn't talk like this. What are executive monkeys? All right, cool study. You got two monkeys, two groups of monkeys. Already sounds fun. But anything with monkeys can't be that bad. By the way, we're going to kill the monkeys at the end of the experiment, so just to get ready. So we got some monkeys, two groups. One group of monkeys is getting predictable shocks. It's signaled. So there's a light, and then a shock happens. It's not enough. It's not like the monkey's going, you know, but it's unpleasant. Right? The other group of monkeys, they're getting the signals, and they're getting the shocks, and they're getting the same number of shocks at the same time as the other monkeys, but the signal has no relationship at all to the shock. So they don't know when the shock is coming. Because they're getting lights and shocks, and there's no relationship. The executive monkeys, the ones that have control, but they don't have control, actually. They have perceived control, right? They don't really have control, do they? Because they can't get out.
Which group has control, the one that has predictable?
Yeah. They don't really have control, but it's like what's called perceived control, because they know that the shock is coming. Right? Perceived control in the standing in line, I know I can just leave. And it's not going to affect my life in any bad way. Maybe I could do with fewer chocolate bars anyway. The executive monkeys, the ones that actually have control over the situation, they don't get the ulcers. They don't have blocked arteries, things like this. The ones that don't have the that have the unpredictable shock, the worker monkeys, you might want to call them, they end up with all the sort of stress effects that Sales saw with the rats. Yeah.
How long does this test?
Months. Yeah. Yeah. Now it wouldn't be all day every day; it'd be a couple hours a day. Pretty interesting. Again, showing us that even if we just know what's coming. Anybody here have a class that has pop quizzes in it? Yeah? Because, I mean, that's much more stressful than knowing a quiz is coming. For both of them, you study. In fact, pop quizzes tend to really maintain studying behavior at a higher level. Makes sense, variable interval schedule. But they could be worth the same amount, but they're much more stressful. People know they got a quiz coming, it's not nearly as big a deal. Even though they don't have control over the content. Right? This is interesting. People that are optimists, people that, you know, the glass half full people, they fare better in life than pessimists. What do I mean by fare better in life? Let's see. They have better jobs. they make more money, they live longer and have fewer health problems. Those are pretty good.
That's all the lack of stress?
Well, it's probably not just that. And also, what direction does it go in? If you're already doing well in life, you're more likely to have a pretty good outlook.
Which would give you the health.
Which also could help that. I mean, yeah, it probably goes both directions, and it's circular. So it's circular, like the wax on, wax off.
Chicken before the
yeah, day. Exactly. It's that kind of thing. But some of this must be because of the less stress in their life. Because they think, oh, everything's going to be okay. When I said that to Dr. Keough about him having all these stressful events in his life, he said, yeah, well, some people see the glass half empty, some people see it half full. I just see a glass of water. It's like, wow, I wish I could have that kind of outlook on life. That's amazing. So when you have less control, there are more stress hormones that are actually released, more cortisol, more epinephrine, norepinephrine. Now, I'm not saying, by the way, that optimists may be completely fooling themselves, by the way. They really may be. Someone who thinks, ah, well, you know, I don't have any control over this in the whole world, you know, I'm just a cog in a machine, is probably closer to reality in some respects, right? That said, it may be more healthy, kind of delude yourself a little bit. Don't those people kind of drive you nuts sometimes, though? Oh, everything's going to be great. Don't worry, it'll be fine. Shut up. The house is on fire. The hell are you talking about? But, I mean, I remember when our basement flooded in Corner Brook, Newfoundland. And I mean, not a little bit. I mean, I watched our washing machine or dryer float by. Okay, that's how much was up to here, the water. And it was about to hit the electrical panel. Happily, that's when the ice jam broke. But I was really, 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 really freaked here. This is before I had my therapy. And this is when my wife said to me, we can get new stuff, you know. And we have insurance. It's like, oh, yeah. Much better attitude, right? In fact, we got better new stuff. The best $40 you can spend. Most of you probably don't own a home. Someday you will. The best $40 you can spend is sewer backup insurance. Just saying. Put that rider on your insurance. Saved us about $18,000. So. All right, let's talk about, oh, this is depressing. Look at that, eh? Scary. Coronary heart disease, stress, and personality. This is back in the 1950s. Friedman and Roseman sort of got the ball rolling on this, looking at differences between people that had coronary heart disease, so in other words, you know, heart attacks, and people that didn't. This is interesting. They even knew back in the 50s that too much fat in your diet and smoking cigarettes were bad for you. Right? So they looked at the two groups and they said, oh, there's no difference there. So it's not just being mediated by that. And men got coronary heart disease back then, not women. Wow. Yeah, some women did, but it was overwhelmingly a male thing. Yep. Men had higher stress jobs. You got to remember, we're talking about the 1950s here. Most women, and I'm not saying staying at home and raising children isn't stressful. I'm not saying that. Please don't take it that way. Please don't take this to the indignation committee. It's a little personal. Anybody get that Simpsons reference? No one? Okay. But point is, in the 1950s, men were working outside the home, and on average, women weren't. Men were dealing with much more stressful situations than women. It's interesting that the amount of heart attacks in women has gone up related to how much there's been more working outside the home. I think it, I'm not saying women then shouldn't work outside the home. Please don't take it that way. Please. And I'm also not saying that work, being at home isn't work. But once the kids are in school, you can play Mass Effect 2 all day. Maybe that's just me. And then do a load of laundry. Again, that's just me. Accountants were fine until right around April. And then they all started having heart attacks. And in the States, tax is, what, April 15th? And here it's April 30th, right? There was a peak in heart attacks in accountants in late March, early April. Wow. Holy Christmas. Stress was killing people. And that looks like a pretty good place to stop because, suspense, it's dramatic. And I'll see you guys on Wednesday. Thanks, guys.
I was unpacking stuff while I was in Toronto, mm-hmm. and I found my old SNES. And I...
Podcast is released under a Creative Commons copyright share like 2.5 Canada. Feel free to redistribute the information as you see fit, but please don't make any money out of it. And if you do, you got to tell me because I'm reserving that right. Giving up all the other ones, including mash it up any way you want, okay? Also, of course, give me attribution. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is dave.brodbeck, B-R-O-D-B-E-C-K, at algomau.ca. My website is people.auc.ca/broadbeck/blog. Most of the music, all the music's PodSafe, and most of it comes from GarageBand.com or the PodSafe Music Network. See you next time.